Hey everybody, if it's the 1st or the 15th, that can only mean one thing. Well, maybe two things, but we aren't cutting any checks yet. We are dropping knowledge though, through the Lit Podcast,
where law, innovation, and technology meet the culture. Get lit with us as we use our collective knowledge, brain power, and cultural capital for good. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 9. That's 9 of the hashtag So Very Lit podcast.
I am Shantavia Jackson Johnson.
Yes, you are.
All my government names.
You probably have a chip somewhere, too, so it's over for us. You have a security card and you got cable. You're being watched constantly, so it really doesn't matter.
Right. That's exactly right.
But we're going to jump right into our first segment. It's called What's Good. And this is the segment where we reconnect with each other. We share what's going on in our lives. We oftentimes haven't talked to each other until now. And we save everything we want to say so that you can listen in like you're at our kitchen table. So Shantavia, what's good?
I'm laughing because you said everything is like you're at our kitchen table. And I'm laughing because I don't have a kitchen table.
How about I don't either? I have a counter. So that's what we're standing.
Oh my gosh. We're living wrong. We are living so wrong. You're at my house sitting on the floor with me and my children.
Love it. Love it.
Oh, man. All right. So what is good? This has been a roller coaster of a couple of weeks. And I have not, I mean, other than Twitter, I don't think I've talked to you at all. And I know, like, you are like globetrotting and everything else. But so many interesting things have happened in the past couple of days. So the first thing is we have an announcement together that we found out about a little while ago. We are going to be speaking at South by Southwest 2020, March 2020, hey. Back in Austin. This is Tanya's, what, four?
Yes, this is my South by Humble Brag moment.
The fourth. So the fourth year for Tanya, the third year for my, Tanya brought me along the next year. So third year for me. We got invited to come as speakers. We will be doing a panel discussion called Tweeting While Black, You in Danger Girl, reference to Ghost, which is, you know, everybody's favorite movie with Whoopi Goldberg and what's his name?
Scorsese.
You know what I'm talking about? The dancing guy. Yes, that guy. So I am so excited. Are you excited
about
South by this year? I'm
so excited, in particular because I feel like this panel, one, you're about to tell them who the amazing women are who are joining us as well, but it's something just really special. Because, one, I think the room is going to be packed. I think it's going to be a huge room, but also because the topic is one that touches on everything we love. So law, innovation, technology, and the culture. Particularly when we are engaging in social media platforms. All of us have strong platforms and somewhat varied experiences, but underneath a common experience that we look forward to sharing with you in 2020 at South By.
Yeah, so everything we love, law, innovation, technology, and Black women.
Yes.
So on the panel will be you, me, two people who I know we both just love and adore and admire because of their work. So Professor Carlos Chapman from Washington and Lee University School of Law. Hey, Carlos. I know Carlos listens to the podcast. But Carlos is amazing. And what some people don't know about Carlos is that she had one of the most viral tweets of 2019.
That's right.
About the concept of personhood with fetuses after like a lot of debate about abortion in the U.S. So Carlos will be there, and because she went viral and had like I think together 750,000 or a million retweets and comments, she had the experience of going viral as a Black woman about abortion, y'all. So I can't even wait to hear what she's gonna say about the types of tweets and responses and that kind of thing she got from celebrities and everywhere else around the world.
Right.
Then the fourth panelist is Tressie McMillan Cottom, who's a professor at Virginia Commonwealth University and one of the most, frankly, dynamic writers of the 21st century. She's written a couple of books, and the most recent book is winning literally, y'all, all the awards.
Literally.
And literally all the awards. The name of the book is Thick.
Yes.
And I mean, I've seen her engage in discussions on Twitter about the book, and the book is about her experience in the U.S. as a Black woman. And so I am just so, so, so excited for this panel where we get to talk about being a Black woman and using Twitter and what that looks like, because there have been all these international studies that have found Black women are Twitter's most targeted group, which is insane because we are on Twitter more than just about any other economic group on the planet.
Absolutely. And so, you know, we, in some sense, as I say, have varied experiences. I even have had, well, I've had a couple of experiences that I'll talk about on the panel. And one is when purported allies come for you on Twitter and don't even know that they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other is the all skin folk ain't kin folk come for you when it is intentional, and how you navigate that as well.
Honey, we're going to have such a time. The thing that I love, the thing that is great and terrible about Twitter is, you know, it makes all these, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but it's true, all these like randoms who are in their mother's basement, like right, coming at you, trying to explain to you things that you knew better than them 10 years ago.
Right.
Like I had this random woman who is not a lawyer, knows nothing about law, knows nothing about me apparently or anything, tried to explain to me how copyright law worked. And
oh,
she was
gosh,
wrong. And I mean, just so many. Anyway, come to South By, y'all. Come to our panel. I'm sure it'll be recorded. We'll make sure we post it places so people can participate, you know, later if you can't be there live. So I am really, really excited about that. That's something that is amazing that's going to happen next year for us.
Absolutely.
The other thing I wanted to mention about what's good, and I don't think you and I have talked about this in person since it happened, but on Saturday, I think it was, my days are running together now, but a couple days ago, this past Saturday, I spoke at the Fulbright Association conference. And like, it was so amazing. So I talked about using pop culture and memes to build bridges around the world. So on brand with this whole concept of Twitter and social media and using memes and stuff. And I have to say, I was like a little skeptical because I was one of seven speakers. I was the only one who was not a current Fulbright scholar.
Okay.
So all these other people have done Fulbrights around the world, and they, you know, talked about globalization from their perspective and their research, and it was all very good. But, you know, I had a very different perspective. And we talked a few weeks ago about being in spaces where, you know, maybe access a few years ago would not have been a possibility. And for me, now threw my name in the ring. I nominated myself to come speak. I was chosen out of, you know, a large number, apparently, is what they told us over the weekend. But it was really, it was amazing. And I got a really good, like, interest from folks. In fact, I got two new speaking engagements out of it. So,
fantastic. That's all, yeah, always our goal.
Always the goal. So that was really exciting. What about you? What's good with you? I know you are, where are you? I don't even know what time zone you're in. What are
where
you doing?
Where am I? I am in Lima, Peru.
Okay, roll the R. Roll the R for the people.
Not to be confused with Bolivia or Argentina or Paraguay.
Girl, don't make me cuss up in here. Look at you.
That's all I got. That's all I got. That and cerveza. That's what I got.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. I'm with it.
So I am in lovely and very cosmopolitan Lima, Peru, and I am attending the ACIPI conference, which loosely translates into the Intellectual Property Association for Latin America. And we have IP professors, excuse me, lawyers from all over the Latinx sphere and people speaking. There are literally 1,000 plus people here between the attendees and perhaps their plus ones. I've
wow,
learned a lot about the intellectual property firms here, and they are robust. They're vibrant. They're participating at every level. I've learned as much as I've given, but I spoke on a huge stage. I think this is the thing for us at this point in time. It actually rivaled the IBM stage that I was on a few weeks back. The production is exceptional. Every event is fantastic, and the content is really rich. So I was talking about the intersection of innovation and copyright in particular. I talked a little bit about the paper I published recently, CryptoKitties, Cryptography and Copyright, and that looks at the really interesting use cases for blockchain technology to solve for some of the Web 2.0 problems that we always talk about rampant infringement and copying without authorization, perfect digital copies, difficult to distinguish the master from the original, orphan work issues, DMCA issues. And so, I really had to hit the high notes because we didn't have a ton of time, but they were really appreciative of sharing the information. And of course, whenever I do something like that, I don't assume that anyone has any basic understanding of blockchain. So I'm getting pretty good at talking about it in about 8 to 10 minutes and then spending the rest of the time on the substance of the connection.
That's really cool. Huh? So how many other speakers are there? Where did you fit like in the spectrum? Did you know anybody? How did you end up on the, like on the speaking dais for this program, this conference?
So I was invited through my law school. We have a lot of connections, obviously, because we're a top 5 intellectual property law school. And so that was our origin, our foundation. And we're always looking for opportunities, not only to connect within the academic setting, but even more importantly, out in the world. Because as academics, you can become so insulated and be so high-minded, high theory that you're no earthly good. And so we want to make sure that we're maintaining connections with people who are actually in the space, working on things, not only for today, but the future. So we'll continue to do events like this around the world. And I'm really excited in particular to make substantial connections and ties in South America in particular. So many amazing things happening in the various countries. There's a lot of social unrest going around in South America as well. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, not here and right now, but we want to maintain those connections. So that's what's good. That's where I am. And as good as it is to be here in a lovely hotel with lovely people, it's going to be even better in about 24 hours when I'm back in my own house in my own bed.
Amen to that.
I know you know what that feels like.
Oh, I sure do. I slept in my own bed last night for the first time in like a week, and it felt amazing. Though I saw the pictures of you and your long layover in Miami, and that hotel was, oh my gosh. I don't know where you were, but amazing. I knew the address.
That's right. Yeah, if you have to be stuck somewhere in a nice hotel in Miami, it could be worse.
Things could always be worse. So this is the beauty of, what are you, executive platinum plus diamond to the 12th power with your airline?
It does help. And to borrow a term from Amex from back in the day, membership has its privileges.
Amen
and
to so, that.
We stay on the road. People always say, you get these complimentary upgrades. There's nothing complimentary about my upgrades. I've paid 10 times over. So the fact that I get an upgrade, I probably paid for it 2 years ago.
Girl, say that again. Say that again.
Excellent. Well, glad that we had a chance to catch up. All right. Time to dig into What's Got Us Lit. This is the segment where we take a deep dive into one or two topics that has us either really excited or really mad. I can never tell quite where Shantavia is coming from. I'm the glass half full. I'm the good cop. I don't know where she's coming from, but I want you to protect yourselves because this is
feeling
like it might be a...
Calling my ass the bad cop.
I just want to level set for the new people. If you don't know, now if you've been rolling with us for a few episodes, you know where we are. But I'm about to find out because I'm about to throw it to Shantavia. Shantavia,
listen.
Wait a minute. Let me throw it to you.
Let me quote Maya Angelou because I've been thinking about her a lot. But she says when somebody shows you who they are, believe them.
And which time? That first time.
True, that first time. That's exactly right. So listen, I'm human, y'all. Just bear with me.
All right, with that caveat.
Now go ahead, throw what you want to throw.
With that caveat, I will now throw it to SJ. Shantavia, what's got you lit?
All right, well listen, in that spirit of me moving in a positive direction here, I have some breaking news. So I was sitting here, I have my notes for what I wanted to say, and technology, you get these notifications. So I just got a notification. This is the NCAA is going to allow college athletes to profit from their name, image, and likeness. Just announced it.
So that's even bigger than the thing that happened in California, I think.
Go ahead. Don't let me.
I think it must be, and I'm not as plugged into what's going on in the States right now, because evidently there's a lot going on in the rest of the world that we never know about. And the only way we find out about it is when we leave the United States. But I think, I don't have it up in front of me now, you might want to do a quick search, that California passed a law at the state level that would allow athletes to participate in some capacity. One of my colleagues, Mike McCann, writes a lot for Sports Illustrated and SI.com as their legal analyst. So I feel like I saw something hit his feet. Mm-hmm. And I thought the response to it was a lot of pushback, of course, from the NC2A. But this was like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken. And it sounds like this is the next step, where there was some backroom conversations about what needs to happen. And as a former scholarship athlete, I'm very excited to hear about it. I don't know that I would have been making any money at that time, but I'm happy for the folks that are coming through now, because it doesn't make any sense the way it's set up.
Come on, humble brag. Scholarship athlete at Northwestern. No, not Northwestern. Was it Howard?
Northwestern undergrad, and Howard. Northwestern.
All right, come on now with it. So according to the notice I just got, the NCAA is, quote, embracing change and starting the process of allowing student athletes to profit on their name, image, and likeness. And the board of governors chairman apparently is also the president of Ohio State University. And he says, look, we have to do better. We have to take steps now because things have changed, including the cost of attendance and guaranteed scholarships. So I think he's right. I've been saying for years, these student athletes are, you know, they're making literally billions of dollars. And now I work at a university that is, you know, making lots of money off of the backs of the names, images, and likenesses of students.
Absolutely.
And I frankly think this is a good, should I say that on the podcast? This is my personal opinion. I am not speaking on behalf of my university. This is my personal opinion.
Right.
And I think this is really interesting. So for just a little bit of backstory, a lot of this started in the mid-90s. When there was a college basketball player named Ed O'Bannon, who played at the University of California, Los Angeles, so UCLA. And 16 years after he was playing on the team at UCLA, the basketball team, the university was still making money off of his image and likeness. And so he filed a lawsuit, and this lawsuit called O'Bannon versus NCAA. And there were really two different claims. One was an antitrust kind of claim within the lawsuit. The other was right of publicity. And so we've been talking about the right of publicity. We talked about it. Who was it with the hologram? Whitney Houston and Tupac. We talked about publicity rights and how, you know, most individuals, this is a state law. So every state is a little bit different, but essentially if you are a private citizen in many states, you have a right of publicity in your image, in your picture, in your name, in your voice. And it is illegal in the states that have a right of publicity for someone to use your name and likeness without your permission for their own kind of personal benefit, money or otherwise. And I've been actually talking about this and writing about it for a while in the social media context of, you know, like using people's pictures, using memes that feature children and GIFs that feature children. So this is actually a really interesting development.
I think so. And I think it's long overdue. And I have always felt like it wasn't a matter of if, but when, given what you said earlier about all the money and the fact that many of the students, you know, it's 1% of the 1% that actually who actually goes pro, and the rest go back to the same humble beginnings in most cases that from whence they came, and how unfair that is. The argument has always been you're receiving an education. Mm-hmm. So that's the, you know, Lord knows I don't want to use the term quid pro quo, Jesus, but that is the exchange of services, and that should be sufficient. But given the multi-billion dollar industry that college sports is, then particularly what I've heard about is that there's this window of opportunity when an athlete in college actually has access to their the potential for agents. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the quote unquote life cycle of their potential, you're thinking of a football player, you know, that's a very small window to make most of the money that they will make in their lifetime just for the sport.
Right.
You have all sorts of other opportunities to leverage for licensing agreements and endorsement deals. And that's where you really start to stack your chips and have a long-term investment in yourself over time. That's how you eat off of your talent for decades and not just for minutes, right? Yeah. So it's a, but the only opportunity to really do that as soon as, let's say, NC2As, you know, you're basically done in February, March, unless your team does really well. Mm-hmm. And then you have this space and time between that and when summer activities hit, and you really need to leverage that opportunity that you did very well in that previous season, and you want to immediately cash in on that, and they are not able to under the current system. So moving to this other system, now the devil's going to be in the details, of course.
Right.
Or the angels, as we like to say here on the Lit Podcast, because we don't mess with
That's
those devils.
That's right. Get back there. We don't want nothing to do with you.
No, ma'am. No, sir. And so it'll be interesting to see what the specific rules are.
Right.
But I'm encouraged by this. I'm encouraged.
That's it. That is really, you know, so you mentioned something earlier about, hey, you're getting an education. But, you know, seeing the machine that is NCAA sports, particularly, you know, with men's football, men's basketball, with track and field at some schools, with tennis at others, with women's basketball at others.
Right.
I mean, these students are spending like a full-time job of time with practice, with traveling, with everything else. I wonder how much education they're actually, you know, getting on the day-to-day kind of level. I know they go to class and this and that, but it certainly is a different educational experience. Plus, with scholarships, you just mentioned scholarships
right.
too, and with men's football, men's basketball, I don't know if it's true with all sports, but you know, you get hurt, you get cut from the team, you lose your scholarship too.
It can be rough.
And that is the tragedy. That is a true tragedy
right,
to
right.
me.
Right, and then what do you have to fall back on? Technically speaking, you're correct. If it still operates now the way it did when I was a scholar athlete, you are not promised in writing 4 years of a scholarship. It is technically renewed on a year-to-year basis. Mm-hmm. Some things may have changed, but it is, in some sense, it's unusual in maybe perhaps in certain sports. I was a tennis player, so it's highly unusual to lose it, but you are not guaranteed it, is your point. Mm-hmm. And I think the point is well made. So you have to make it when you can make it. Also, those rules about when you can enter the pro arena, right? Some of the most draconian rules are on the women's sports side. And
right. So
I'm worried about that as well.
Yeah, because didn't you play professional? Weren't you on the professional circuit for a while?
Yes. I played on scholarship for 4 years at Northwestern, and then I played professionally for 4 years out in those worldly streets, going from country to country on the Challenger and Satellite circuits, trying to earn enough points always to get into the majors. Hmm. My best year was in 93. When I played at the time, you're younger than me, so you probably weren't even born then. But there was a time, young people.
Come on now.
There was a time in the 20th century when
I was born. Don't get it twisted
really
now.
Born.
I was born.
Really born.
I might have been in middle school, but I was born.
There, that's fine. So the women's tennis tour was sponsored by Virginia Slims. A cigarette company,
uh-huh.
of all things. And so I played a lot of Virginia Slims events. I won a national USTA event and got a wild card into the qualifying rounds of the US Open. And so I played there, and that week I won more money in that week than I did probably in the 6 months before.
Wow.
So those are my glory days. Those are my glory days.
Huh, that's really interesting. So this is personal for you, this whole concept of college athletes being able to leverage their personas in some way.
Absolutely. And when
I'm
I was
excited
at,
to see it.
When
Go
I
ahead.
Was at Northwestern, I, in my semi-radical days, because you always tease me because I'm not very radical, I can get hyped up. I just choose it. I'm just, you know, I'm so tired. I gotta choose my social unrest very wisely. Understand.
Yes, ma'am.
But I was hype about this one thing because scholarship athletes were being required to submit to drug testing. And in you know, at a high level, I don't necessarily, I have some issues with it, but I don't necessarily disagree, because they're giving you money and they want you to do whatever. But they were only doing that for athletes, not for the others who were receiving scholarships. That's what I thought was unfair. So I created this organization called, the acronym was Say No. I was, you know, into trademarks before I knew
Look at you. Okay, you got a brand and everything.
Come on,
y'all have a MySpace page?
Girl, it was before MySpace, but don't take me there.
Damn, okay.
We just got computers in our room, so don't even play me on that. AIM was just coming up. Like, I had an AOL account and it was hot.
Got it.
You've
got mail.
Yes, right. Say No was Student Athletes Against Northwestern Oppression. Say No. And
wow, I like it. Okay.
Right. We went all the way in. I can't even remember the outcome, but at least I tried. I you know, I had meetings. We had some unrest. And then I probably went to training table, ate, and went back to class. I don't know.
The young activist. I love it. I love it. So we're going to see exactly how this impacts the college athletes of today. I actually have been surprised that I've not seen more of them. Maybe I'm not surprised, because, you know, they need to keep their money and everything. But it is good to see that student athletes may be getting some reprieve in this space.
Agreed.
So can I mention really quickly, I know we probably spent a lot of time talking about that, so we may be running low on time, but I have got to, if I don't do anything else on this podcast today, shout out Representative Joyce Beatty, Democrat from Ohio, for the way she grilled the hell out of Mark Zuckerberg during the congressional hearings a few days ago about Facebook and its civil rights work and this question of data protection and everything else. Did you see how she grilled this man about their diversity efforts and how it related to the collection of data with respect to people of color?
She gave it a master class. I saw some of the clips that were trending for sure. And I want to go back and sit down and like see it in its full context. But you get all the flavor and all the heat for sure.
Oh my goodness, I saw a meme online, and when I tell you, I about cracked up for about 5 or 10 minutes straight. This meme said, because they played a little clip, and maybe we could play a little bit of a clip on the podcast, but they played a little clip, and the like caption was, Joyce Beatty joins a long line of black women who don't ask questions they don't know the answers to.
That part.
Because she asked this man, what firms are you using? Who is responsible for your company's civil rights initiatives? What is happening with your civil rights audit? He had mentioned some woman's name. She asked about this woman in particular. He didn't know a damn thing about really anything off the top of his head about Facebook's the policies and activities activities with respect to race, diversity, and civil rights. And this, to me, is so amazing and incredible because of something you've been talking about on the podcast for a while, Facebook getting into the financial services industry with its Libra coin, the way in which we talked about this a few weeks ago, data collection and how they're collecting data about people and how data collection and facial recognition technology and all these other things these social media companies like Facebook are doing that negatively impact black people and people of color. And then we are disproportionately on these platforms versus other ethnic groups.
Right.
And for the CEO and founder of this company to not have any, and knowing where he was coming,
right,
he knew he was coming to this congressional hearing, not having any answers. It just really blew my mind. It did, but listen, Representative Beatty, I bow down to your greatness because I was over here like, yes, yes, yes. Like, who, y'all know her. Somebody please. I'm going to tweet her or something because this woman needs to be my friend. I mean, we both have been thinking about this for years. I've been researching and writing about the intersection between culture and social media for a long time and researching and waving the flag. And I was just so glad to see somebody picking it up and holding, or at least attempting to hold Facebook accountable for its activities.
No, because you don't get a second chance with a platform like this. It'd be one thing if it was a smaller platform that doesn't have the network effects and the reach that a Facebook does. But if you don't do this on the front end, and, you know, I'm in the crypto community, and many of those in the crypto community did not like this line of questioning and bringing all these other social issues into the fore. But it
Miss me with it.
It touches all the things, politics, socioeconomic status, inclusion, equity. If we thought that brown and black people were left behind in the 20th century with each advance in technology, we just get further and further behind. This is one of those opportunities where we are seeing the new rails of technology, the infrastructure being built in this moment. And we have to participate, and the failure to participate and appreciate and to push back, to hold accountable our representatives and our senators, and certainly those in private sectors, it all is lost.
Yes. And let me just, all right, I'm about to get on my soapbox for 23 and a half seconds. So okay. I love and hate when I hear these folks, usually white men, let me just say it, talking about free speech and freedom of expression and blah, blah, blah. We need to have open discourse. It is always the folks who have no experience with being marginalized, with being attacked. So this is our South by Southwest panel. You don't have any real experience with what it is like to be a woman who is being attacked by folks on social media, people looking into where you live, where your children go to school and all that, because we need to have global discourse. We need to have free speech. Free speech don't have a damn to do with whether or not Facebook or social media fact checks ads or disallows certain types of speech. Free speech applies to the government limiting the things you can say, not any private company like Facebook. So I'm so done with hearing these conversations about, oh, we need to have an open platform where everybody can say whatever they want. No, we don't. We do
right,
not.
That's called the public square.
Right.
Everything this is else. Not, you know,
go right. ahead. I'm sorry. I'm off my, I'm getting down. Go ahead.
No, we get it. We could spend the rest of our time just delving into this. And that's what one of the many things I love about our exchange is that we're just not, you know, coloring inside the lines of law, innovation, and technology. All of those things are informed or should be informed by a vast range of issues because they do anyway. They already impact it. So to not talk about it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
That's exactly
and
right.
And that's the pushback.
Yes. So we will continue to monitor this. I'm going to find Representative Beatty. I want to be there next time answering some questions because I was vibing with her. I had all my facts and my statistics that I wanted to shout yes. back out when she was asking Mark Zuckerberg, who did give me some of those billions. I will use them appropriately
Amen.
To create the right Amen. Platform. So anyway, Ms. Tanya, what's got you lit? So I'm over here heated about about all of this. What's got you lit today?
Well, I want to talk today about about Lizzo's copyright controversy. And
oh, that's a good one. That's a really good one.
So I don't have a dog in the fight per se, so I'm not heated or happy. I'm just interested and intrigued. And this is something that happens a lot. First of all, for those who have been under a rock for the last 2 years, Lizzo, this amazing singer, flautist, rapper, body positive, amazing woman, has this longest running number one song by a female artist on Billboard's, topping the Hot 100 list for 7 weeks. And as a side note, one of the many things I love about this is the fact she's still eating off of a song that dropped 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Who does that?
Mm-hmm.
Who does that, right? So it proved that it's worth, took a little while as she organically and authentically just moved through the world and just has this amazing following. And then she has this hit that she wrote 2 years ago. Now, she also collabed evidently with at least one person, but as happens with a number of people who are all of a sudden hit the top and become a success, then there are a lot of people that say, hey, I contributed to your success and I want my cut. We've seen it with in the Blurred Lines area. Katy Perry's Dark Horse, Ed Sheeran's Thinking Out Loud. So this idea, this question of authorship and copyright infringement comes up in music all the time. These are just some of the most recent examples, but it literally happens almost every day. And the cases multiply because the amount of money that you can get for a publishing credit as a songwriter as opposed to a performer is really, really important. And, you know, we could talk about the different types of the two types of copyright in the lyrics, right? And also in the sound recording mm-hmm. of lyrics. Mm-hmm. It's the thing that allows people to cover a song. Song is written by Dolly Parton, for example, I Will Always Love You. Whitney knocks it out of the park in a way that Dolly Parton never could. And Dolly Parton gets all the receipts as the songwriter, even though many, many different people perform it.
All right.
So that, right?
Yeah.
So
wait a minute, though, Tanya. Hold on now. Dolly Parton is probably my favorite artist, song artist.
What?
I am not kidding. I'm listening to her podcast right now, which is phenomenal. So I know you said in a way Dolly never could. I'm going to let it go because you're probably right. But let me just say, Miss Parton, when you listen
well,
to
Well, let me
this,
say this. Never did. Never did.
Never did.
For this song.
Never did.
Never But she even has said that. She said that in her interviews, and she loves it. She's like, sing your heart out. God rest her soul. Whitney Houston, do your hologram or whatever you need to do. I'm still eating off of that.
Right. Bless your heart. Darn straight. I'm sure she supports it because she's getting a check every time. But yeah, you are right. But Miss Parton, when you hear this, do know I love you. And I've been to Dollywood. I'm not even going to tell you how many times I've been to Dollywood. It is a bit embarrassing. But I actually have she's probably my favorite artist of all time. I am not even kidding.
Wow.
Random
wow.
deviation.
You just dropped an entire truth. Love it.
But come on back.
We're going to have a
living.
Quiz. We're going to have a quiz at the end of the season. And I'm definitely going to include this on the quiz for sure.
That's hilarious.
All right. So this Truth Hurts case controversy revolves around three main individuals. They've say that they have an interest in establishing themselves on songwriting credits. Lizzo has only shared songwriting credit with one other person, and it comes down to the now iconic phrase that begins the song. I just took a DNA test. Turns out I'm 100% that B. Right?
So, bitch, I'll say it.
She said it, I didn't, but y'all were feeling it. I'm sure you were singing along. It's fine. And then we have these two songwriting brothers, Justin and Jeremiah Raisin, who wrote a song demo called Healthy with Lizzo during a 2017 session, which is the same time as the song came up. And they say that they saw a meme that said that. Lizzo said she saw the meme and, you know, this is what it is. Can somebody get a songwriting credit because they posted a meme with some words that ended up in a song? Your thoughts?
Okay. All right. So, you know, I have lots and lots and lots and lots
memes.
Of thoughts about this. Broadly speaking, let me just say, so people do not take memes seriously. I already know that. But there are multiple lawsuits pending right now because the substance of an infringement suit was the sharing of a meme. And let me just say at the very beginning of all this, copyright law in the United States, I can't tell you about everywhere else around the world, but the United States drives a lot of intellectual property policy around the world. Copyright law in the United States is not designed to deal with this problem. It is not. And you know this better than I do. Copyright law is what, 300 or 400 years old at least?
Here we are.
And it is not designed. That's right. It is not designed to deal with this type of issue. And frankly, again, going back to social media entities that have been built on the kind of foundation of broad scale sharing, even they do not have great solutions to these types of questions. So I have two answers. First, with respect to the way the law is right now, and then kind of what I think it should be. So the way the law stands right now, copyright infringement is based on what, substantial similarity in access, isn't that right?
Right.
Or no, yeah, well, substantial similarity in access.
Because you'll either have like direct copying, like verbatim copying, mm-hmm. most often you don't have that instance, or people won't even admit it. And so you have this, if it's not direct, then maybe we call it indirect with what you've said as substantial similarity as a matter of fact, like point, like A, B, C, and D are also in the resulting work, and mm-hmm. then access. And that, you know, people spend a lot of time arguing about that, like assuming that it's the same, and for purposes of copyright, it can be, right? Mm-hmm. you and I could sit in different spaces independently, literally come up with the same haiku conceivably, right?
Right.
And as long as I didn't copy yours and you didn't copy mine, even if it technically had the same words, which would be divine, but it doesn't have to be infringement, right? Mm-hmm. As a matter of law, we often don't see that. It's more the substantial similarity where, like, did I have access to your work and all of these other things that come into play.
Right. And how close is it to the original?
How close is it? That's right.
And here, I don't think we know all the facts, but either way, I think Lizzo has actually come out and said, yeah, I saw that meme. And that meme inspired me to put the lyric in the song. And it is literally verbatim copying. So, you know, to your point, it's rare to have that instance where somebody says, yeah, I saw it and I copied it. Literally, Lizzo said that apparently to, I think it was Billboard or whoever she did the interview with, or maybe she posted it on Twitter.
But she tweeted it. Yeah. She tweeted it. And we'll share that in the show notes.
Yeah, so I went and found the original tweet from the, it's a young black woman from the UK. Mm. Her Twitter account is Mina Lioness. I don't know if that's her real name or not. And the line literally from her tweet is, I did a DNA test and found out I'm 100% that bitch. And so literally, so the complication though, and you probably know more about the nuances than I do here, but copyright law also says this doesn't really apply to very short phrases, right? Like titles of books, for example.
Right.
But, you know, this song lyric, there's also copyright lawsuits out there that say when you take like the most important piece of a work, the most important line, and that's what you copy, then that is technically copyright infringement. And, you know, I love Lizzo. I love that song. I heard it in 2017 when it first came out. I found out about it on Instagram from, you know, I follow a lot of teenagers. So I found out about it there. I love it. But technically, the undercurrent copyright law, it does kind of sound like copyright infringement, specifically from copying that tweet from that young lady. Now, these two guys she was working with, I don't know what they're talking about.
I know.
That's a whole different matter.
She's sharing with the person who tweeted.
Right. She's sharing with Mina Lioness. Yes. Right.
Yes.
These other two guys, I mean, I'm with Lizzo. I think I saw something where she said, I will not give these men credit for work that I came up with myself.
Well.
And I tend to agree with her on that. I mean, there's no way they posted a video apparently of their session, but I tend to agree with her. I don't know that much about songwriting credits and how you go about getting them. I know sometimes people get them without doing jack.
Absolutely.
Other times
I was just about to say
when they do a lot. So I'm interested to see what happens here, but the basis of the lawsuit, so there is a lawsuit,
right?
But Lizzo filed a lawsuit against these two other guys saying, hey, you're saying this about me and it is not true.
Love it
which I respect. Hey, don't come for me unless I send for you. I like that approach to litigation. Now I was over here minding my business, eating my food. And here you come.
Our new favorite meme. Now you should have just said,
Ate your food. That's what you should have done. Now go and get your lawyer. Let's talk about it in court. Let the judge figure it out.
Love it.
So harassment. I'm interested to see what happens. Yeah, harassment. So I think, you know, the person who might have had a claim, that Mina Lioness who tweeted the original lyric, I think she and Lizzo have worked something out, and it's going to turn out very well for this young woman, right? Because that song is, you know, probably one of the most popular songs of the year, along with Old Town Road, which is another song that, you know, intersects with memes. But at any rate, you know, I think these two guys, like I said, should have just sat over there and ate their food, because I don't know that much is going to come out of this. To your point, this happens all the time. But big picture, and I would love to know your thoughts on this, copyright law, legislators, listen to me, copyright law needs a 21st century update, and we need a better mechanism outside of Congress and outside of this kind of like very draconian legislation to handle these types of issues. Trademark law has done it with with ICANN, the international blah 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 of assigned domain names. Copyright law needs something similar, because this is only going to grow. People use memes and pictures and viral things all the time, and nobody knows what to do about it.
I'm with you.
I'm definitely
with you. I mean, think basically the 1976 Act is still in pertinent part in force. We have tinkered at the edges. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, the large lobbying constituency comes from the entertainment industries and intellectual property rich or content rich, creativity rich industries. And so that's the entertainment industry, software industry. And there's no, right? Disney. The Disney, right? Mickey Mouse is up there.
Disney, like the.
Yeah, Mickey Mouse is doing all the work. And there, you know, we don't have a counterbalance to protect the space for fair use, for users' rights. Canada has done some fantastic work to actually enact legislation that protects users' rights in certain instances online. And I think, and I've written some papers about whether or not we would do that in the United States as well. I think that we certainly should. I just don't think that Congress right now is in a space to do it, but it's not that it shouldn't be done for sure. So let's hope that happens soon.
Yeah.
Right. I don't want you to get too hyped.
A lot on their plates right now. Right. Let's not go there because I'm not trying to get fired.
Fair. Let's move on.
All right. Let's move on.
All right, everybody, we are moving to our final segment, our action item to level up. And I look forward to hearing what Shantavia has to say in order to give you some actionable items that you can move forward in your life, either based on what we've talked about today or something that's percolating in the background that we've been working on over time. So Shantavia, any final words for action items for folks to level up? I know you've been doing a lot of work with your company Leverage to move and advance the ball forward in a meaningful way for women. And so maybe there's something there that you want to share to help people level up.
Why, thank you. There is. So the thing that I've been thinking about today as we've been recording this podcast episode is conferences. So you are at a conference in Peru. I just got back from a conference in DC, and I don't think you're this way, but I am. I don't know if you're this way or not, but I am an introvert, like introverted to the point of, you know, my husband often is like, do you have any friends? I mean,
excuse you, husband.
Right, exactly.
At least as me and her entire sorority. So
that's right.
I'm thinking she's okay.
365,000 friends in Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. No, but I am very introverted. And for years, I did not understand the true importance of going to conferences. I just didn't like them. I don't like making small talk. I don't like wearing name tags. I don't like getting 100 business cards and then, you know, feeling bad because I don't follow up with anybody, right? But
I have a stack of them sitting right in front of me.
I know you do. But they're important, right? Like you were talking about building international bridges with respect to blockchain and learning about, you know, things that are happening around the world. I know you've been to like Thailand and all over the place, really connecting with people and learning about blockchain. Similarly with me, with entrepreneurship and with, you know, thinking about entrepreneurship on a global scale, going to conferences like the Fulbright Association, which is, you know, the premier international educational program for people going abroad and going to other conferences about entrepreneurship. It is important to go. So I just encourage our listeners, like, look for conferences that not only help you learn about things, but also help you build connections with other people. And, you know, if you're an introvert like me, get some tools and strategies. I have a couple of tools and strategies I'm going to suggest to, you know, get the most out of conferences, and not just in terms of getting what you want, but also being of service to other people. So in terms of why I think you should go, so pick one, listeners, for the next maybe 12 months or so. Look around at some conferences. Look for some in your field. And the reason you need to go is to learn, like I said, from leaders and experts, to build a network, and then third, to do one of the things I mentioned happened to me last week in D.C., find other speaking opportunities. So I went for this one Fulbright thing. I didn't get paid for it, and I felt kind of a way about that. But I got two paid speaking opportunities from going to this one conference where I wasn't paid, but where I thought the platform was it aligned so much with the work that I'm doing that I thought it was important to go. And if you have the if conferences make you uncomfortable, I have kind of three suggestions for you. The first thing is, if you're an introvert or if you're an extrovert, go with a plan. Like, what is the plan to do this? Is it to meet certain people? Is it to learn two new strategies you can use in your own business or professional life? And then number three, how can you be of service to other people? Like, go in with some amount of knowledge that you are willing to share with others. The sharing with others, frankly, in my opinion, is more important than going and, you know, getting a business card from some famous or important leader in your field. And if you're looking for conferences that align with the types of things you're interested in, if you visit my network, so I've created a private community of women who support each other, who are interested in either building a personal brand or starting a business. If you come visit us, I keep a running list. I've got probably about 100 different conferences that I've put there for women looking for spaces where they can leverage their expertise, find their tribe, and find people they can connect with. And if you want to visit that site, it is lvrgnation.com. So www.lvrgnation.com. That's Leverage. The name of my company is Leverage without the vowels in it. I keep a list of conferences there. So that's my level up. Find a good conference that aligns with you and your work. Go and have a game plan. What about you, Tanya? What can our listeners do to level up?
I love it. So I'm going to piggyback off of you just because I've been thinking about some things for myself here at this conference, particularly with the language barrier. So I used to be somewhat conversant in Spanish for the reasons I mentioned. I traveled a lot to South American and Central American countries in order to, when I was a professional tennis player, et cetera, et cetera. And I was far better. And I'm worried about America, actually. Because the rest of the world speaks at least 2-3 languages, sometimes more. Mm-hmm. And we are steady rocking English, and that's just not going to get us where we need to be. So as an aside, as I say that out loud, start studying another language, especially Spanish. I am here in a Spanish-speaking country, and I am an extroverted introvert like you. You might be a little more than me. Mm-hmm. But I'm a Leo, so that's where I get that from. But I'm definitely an extroverted introvert and an only child. So I'm my own best friend, and I'm perfectly happy to spend long periods of time in silence with a fabulous robe by myself. But I also like to go out, mix and mingle, and be in the middle of the scene and see what's happening. But I don't have to. It doesn't actually, at a certain point, it drains me. It doesn't fuel me. And that's how I know I'm not a true extrovert. At a certain point, I have to tap out and recharge. So at these conferences, but what I have found in where I'm going is that at the conferences, the magic actually doesn't happen in the session.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mm-hmm. when you're speaking, oftentimes, particularly in the blockchain space, I may be the only woman of color, generally the only Black woman, certainly. And so I will be immediately recognizable. People see me before, mm-hmm. but they notice me before, but they see me after I speak. I've been stopped in the hallways going to other things, not sessions, and had the best conversations, including being invited to 2 speaking engagements after this in different countries.
Oh, wow.
Including one in Colombia. There's these women are dynamic women. They have a fantastic firm. They were so excited about my presentation, about the intersection of intellectual property and blockchain. They were telling me about all of the initiatives of blockchain in Colombia and how there's a lot of focus on it. I would have never known that. And not only to tell me that and to put it on my radar, but also to invite me to speak. So they gave me their information. After this episode, I'm going to sit down and start my follow-up that Shantavia was talking about earlier. Critically important to do that. Not easy when you're drained, but this is the thing where you come away from an experience, whether or not you're paid, to set up your next opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I say that to say that many of those opportunities, because oftentimes you're not really speaking to people in session. You want to be seen, but it's afterwards. And so that means you have to come out of your room. You have to go into the social spaces and participate in the social events. That's where the magic happens. That's when people follow up to say, oh, I really liked this. I didn't have the opportunity to ask that. And, oh, will you come and do this for my organization, law firm, company, etc. So spend those times. And I will also say you should do that at work. So we did, I think 3 episodes ago, I talked a lot about upskilling at work. And that's important to leverage, not only leverage your existing skills, but to learn new things to remain relevant and stay ahead of the curve. But you also have to engage in those soft skills about connections, because you'll find out about the next opportunity at the golf outing or at the happy hour. Even if you don't drink, have a club with lime, nobody's going to know. But you need to be in the space, because people gravitate toward people whom they know and feel comfortable with. So everything's not necessarily about you being a woman, you being Black, you being queer. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know you. Mm-hmm. So you have to be in the space and give other people an opportunity to see you and to know you. So I recommend that to you. The final point is, I want to remind you all, we have 66 days left in this year. On the 67th day, it will be not only a new year, but a new decade. So continue to get your house in order. Think of the 3 things that you must do by the end of the year. If you need to crush procrastination, if you need to schedule your priorities, if you need to schedule speaking opportunities or reach out to that person or to follow up on that business card. Like, don't make it 7 things, 10 things, all the things. 3 things that you must do by the end of this year to set yourself up for success in 2020, which is just around the corner.
Oh, I love it. Such good advice. I needed this advice before I went to DC. So hey. This is going to sound so terrible. So we had an opportunity to go have dinner at the Polish ambassador's house. That's where the dinner was the first night.
Yes.
And I was so exhausted from talking to people all day. I didn't even go.
I hear you. I've been there. No judgment.
Then there was a dinner last night two nights ago, and an award went to the president of Croatia.
Wow.
And 2 other people. I didn't go to that either. I was so exhausted. But You are so right. That is where the magic happens. It is not in the session. It's afterwards.
Right.
Great, great advice. Thank you very much, Miss Tanya. So this was an awesome episode.
This is great.
I'm so excited about it.
I am too. I feel better because I was dragging. I was like, yes, get in the game. We are talking to ourselves as much as we are talking or sharing with you. So we are brought to life by what we share. We want you to reciprocate that energy and connect with us on social media and all those other places and spaces. It is those places and spaces where the magic happens too. Mm-hmm. So you know where to find us, right? We'll drop in the show links all of our websites, Twitter, but we want to make sure that you come to Lit Brain Trust on all social media and engage with us, and then you can find us that way. We want you to like and follow and comment and all the things so that we know that you're there, that you're listening, that you love it. Anything that you don't love, reach out and tell us. Everything that you do love, reach out and tell the world. Any closing comments, Shantavia?
And rate us. Rate us on Apple iTunes or Apple Podcasts and whatever the rest of y'all use. I don't know. what does everybody else use?
I don't know what the young folks are doing.
iTunes and
TikTok. You want to dance with us?
Right. Do all that. Go rate us however you're listening to this. Please go rate us. Leave us some good comments, some good feedback about the show. Thank you so much for listening yet again. I'm so excited. We made it to episode 9. We got a few more this season. And I'm really, really excited about what's coming next. We're going to have some really great stuff for you guys. So, like Tanya said, reach out to us across social media platforms at Lit Brain Trust. Send us an email at ask@litbraintrust.com. Holla at us, y'all. Let us know how things are going. And I think that's all we have, Tanya. Do you have anything else?
That's it. That's the app. Hashtag stay so very lit.
All right, y'all. Bye.
The Lit Podcast is produced by Stephanie Renee for Soul Sanctuary Incorporated.